Good morning, everyone. First of all, a little bit of logistics. This is going to be our last class of the series for now. Stay tuned for updates from Hadar about... just a moment. Stay tuned for updates from Hadar about what's going to be in this time slot in the coming weeks. That email should go out fairly soon. In the meantime, if you have any suggestions for something that you would particularly like in this slot, or if you, in general, feel free to email me at adler@hadar.org. Again, that's adler@hadar.org. And if for some reason you forget that, you can email just about anyone at hadar.org, tell them it's for Rav Tali, and the email will get to me. Okay, let's get started. What we're going to be looking at today is actually a text from Root Rabbah. Because we're coming up on Shavuot, we don't have a usual parsha this week. So in lieu of that, we'll be looking at a text that is from the book of Agadic Commentary. That's not exactly the right word. Agadic Midrash, written about Megillat Rut. And the text we'll be looking at today actually plays with the ideas of reciprocity, I would say, between God and the Jewish people. Just a little bit of background. Shavuot in the rabbinic imagination is generally understood as the holiday when we accept the Torah. Part of the way we interpret Megillat Rut as applying to that theme is viewing Rut as the paradigmatic convert, the paradigmatic person who comes from the outside and accepts the Jewish people and accepts the Torah. What we'll be looking at today is a midrash that actually plays with the ways that God accepts what I'll call Torah created by the Jewish people. And what I want us to think about in the back of our minds is, how does this change the relationship that we imagine between God and the Jewish people when we bring into focus times when God has to accept something that the Jewish people has created? Okay, let's get started. Now, Naomi, we're going to look first at the psukim that the Midrash is going to focus on. Now, Naomi had a kinsman on her husband's side, a man of substance. I want us to pay attention to this phrase because it's going to come up again in some of the cited psukim that we'll see. The phrase used is gibor chayil, which is a fairly unusual phrase in Tanakh, of the family of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "I would like to go to the fields and glean among the ears of corn, behind someone who may show me kindness." "Yes, daughter, go," she replied, and off she went. She came and gleaned in the fields behind the reapers, and as luck would have it, it was a piece of luck of land belonging to Boaz, who was of Elimelech's family. Now pay attention to the coming pasuk. That's going to be the jumping off point for our midrash. Presently, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem. He greeted the reapers, "The Lord be with you," and they responded, "The Lord bless you." And I'm going to reread that in the Hebrew. "V'hineh Boaz ba mi bet lechem, v'yomer lakotzrim Hashem imachem, v'yomer lo yivarechecha Hashem." This is a fairly unusual sort of greeting in Tanakh. And what the Midrash is going to be playing with as its starting off point, where did this greeting come from? This idea of greeting people in the name of God, this seems to be some sort of ritualistic greeting that people are accustomed to. Where did it come from? Okay, let's jump in. This is from the fourth chapter of Root Rabbah. Sorry, I can't resist just a little bit. Root Rabbah actually opens with a Petichta chapter, which largely focuses on issues of acceptance of the Torah, of exile. So really, if we're counting from the Petichta chapter, this is chapter 5. But if you're following along in a book at home, this is chapter 4. Okay. "And behold, Boaz came from Beit Lechem. Rabbi Tanchuma, in the name of the rabbi, said, 3 things the lower Beit Din decreed and the upper Beit Din agreed with them. And these were to greet someone in the name of God, the Megillah of Esther, and Maasrot." We're today only going to be looking at the part of the Midrash that deals with the first two. for the sake of time. But what this is saying so far is there are actually three moments where human beings created some sort of law, created some sort of halakha, and the upper Beit Din, meaning God, God's self, acquiesced, God agreed. And they were to greet someone in the name of God. So this is looking back at the Pasuk from Megillat Rut and saying that actually was something that the human Beit Din decided and God approved. Megillat Esther, which is a post-biblical holiday that was created. I won't say post-biblical, but certainly post-destruction of the first temple holiday that was created. And the final one was Ma'asrot, which seems to mean, in context, paying Ma'aser even once the people are no longer in the land of Israel. Line two. From where comes the greeting? The first one on the list. As it is said, that think to cause my people to forget my name. Yirmiyahu 23:27. So why did they create this greeting in the name of God? Because we have a pasuk in Yirmiyahu that talks about a time where the Jewish people will start to forget the name of God because of false prophets who are actually reporting falsely in God's name. When did they think this? In the days of Ataliah. So when did this happen? Perhaps in the days of Ataliah, who was a wicked queen. And the rabbi said in the days of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, co-contemporaries of Daniel. You'll notice that all of these are things that happen after Megillat Rut, even though they're saying that Boaz instituted this greeting. There are different ways of understanding this. One is that the rabbis in this midrash are very much not thinking in terms of linear time, which you'll see they actually say explicitly later on in the midrash. The other is that the Beit Din somehow foresaw these circumstances and instituted greeting in the name of God to try to push that off in the future. Rabbi Chanina, in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, the son of Rabbi Simon, said, in the days of Mordechai and Esther. And what did they do as a result? Because they foresaw that people would be forgetting the name of God. And Boaz stood in his Beit Din and ordained that people greet someone in the name of God in order to forestall this forgetting. As it is said, and behold, Boaz came from Beit Lechem, and he said unto the reapers, Hashem be with you. In the same way, the angel said to Gideon, Hashem is with you, mighty man of valor. So where do we see that God somehow accepted this custom that was instituted by Boaz? We actually go what is presumably back in time, although it is incredibly hard to date when Megillat Rut is supposed to fall out along the timeline of the Shoftim, of the chieftains. We're going to look at this pasuk from the story of Gideon, from Judges, from Shoftim, where we see an angel actually greeting Gideon in the name of God. An angel of the Lord, I'm in the comment now, if anyone's following along on the chat, on the doc. An angel of the Lord came and sat under the terebinth at Ophrah, which belonged to Yoash the Abiezrite. His son Gideon was then beating out wheat inside a wine press in order to keep it safe from the Midianites. So I want us to pay attention here. Here is our first clue that these stories are somehow perhaps thematically related. In Boaz's case, in Megillat Rut, we're very clearly in an agricultural gathering wheat moment. And here again, we have Gideon gathering wheat. The angel of the Lord appeared to him and said to him, the Lord is with you, valiant warrior. Gibor Chayil. Again, the appellation that we applied to Boaz before is being applied to Gideon here. Gideon said to him, please, my Lord, if the Lord is with us, why has all this befallen us? Where are all his wondrous deeds about which our fathers told us, saying, truly, the Lord brought us up from Egypt. Now the Lord has abandoned us and delivered us into the hands of Midian. Okay. Two things I want to make sure that we notice. One, Gideon is being greeted by the angel in the name of God. The Lord is with you. which in the Midrash is taken to be God agreeing to what the human Beit Din, what Boaz instituted. But two, whereas before we were talking about this being instituted in order to make sure that the Jewish people do not forget the name of God, here we're looking at this and Gideon's response is, but has God forgotten us? I want to really pay attention to just how heartrending this language is. If the Lord is with us, why has all this befallen us? We have all these stories from our ancestors saying, God took us out from Egypt, God did all of this for us, but we're here and we're subjugated, and what do we do with that? Has God abandoned us? Has God forgotten us? And here, I think, is the second pointer to reciprocity in this relationship. Not just in accepting, but in fear of abandonment. God is afraid, or the human Beit Din is afraid that God will be abandoned, that human beings, the Jewish people, will forget God. Here is Gideon saying, I'm afraid that God has forgotten us. And this greeting in the name of God seems to be in the Midrash's telling, when linked to these psukim, not just a way of making sure that the Jewish people don't forget God, but a way of reminding each other that God has not forgotten us. Okay, case one. If you have any clarifying questions or thoughts, please feel free to put them in the chat. We're going to keep going now for the sake of time. From where comes the Megillah of Esther? So now we're on the second thing that God acquiesced when human beings instituted it. This one is much more straightforward. Obviously, the Megillah of Esther contains a whole host of mitzvot that are not part of the Torah, and this is going to be very disturbing for the rabbis. How can Megillat Esther add a new holiday, new obligations, meaning Mishloach Manot, Matanot Levionim, all sorts of things that are nowhere in the Torah, and do that entirely on their own authority? Where does that come from? How do we deal with that? From where comes the Megillah of Esther? Rabbi Yirmiah said in the name of Rabbi Samuel, son of Isaac, said, what did Mordechai and Esther do? They wrote letters and sent them to all the people in exile. And they said to them, you undertake to celebrate these 2 days in the future. And they sent letters back and replied, these crises with Haman, were they not enough? And yet you require us to celebrate these 2 days? Meaning, lay low. We managed to escape this time. We managed to escape. It was wonderful. We are all alive. Guess who's not going to like it if we celebrate the fact that we escaped year after year and the fact that we killed our enemies year after year? Our enemies. How about you make life better for all of us and you do not institute this holiday so that we're not reminding them all the time of the fact that we slaughtered our enemies? And they said to them, meaning Esther and Mordechai replied to them, if you say this because you are afraid, see, it is written in the scrolls. As it is said, are not these things written in the book of Chronicles? So this is a pasuk from Esther. Halohim k'tuvim al sefer divrei hayamim. And here, divrei hayamim seems to actually be indicating the secular historical chronicles. Don't worry about me reminding, don't worry about this holiday reminding them. They have this written down. But what I want us to pay attention to is that the word book, the word sefer, and the word Megillah are going to recur again and again in the Midrash, in the Midrash's take here. What did they do? They wrote a second letter and sent it to them, this second letter of Purim. So, this somewhat confusing part at the end of Megillat Esther, where there's a letter sent out and then there's a second letter sent out. The way that the Midrash is making sense of it is that actually this holiday that we all take for granted was at first rejected, and rejected on the grounds of fear. And I want us to pay attention to this. This is actually an indication that there are two parts in the acceptance of these new mitzvot that are being issued. We're going to get to the acceptance by God, but first, the part that we often overlook is, what does it take for this to be accepted by people? What are the barriers here? And part of the barrier is not just religious, is not just piety, as we'll see in the next one. And piety meaning you're adding on to the Torah, and that scares me. But I have my own well-being to look out for, and we have our own well-being to look out for. What is this going to do to us? Okay, we'll get back to that imminently. Rabbi Chalbo, in the name of Rabbi Samuel, the son of Nachman, said, 85 elders, and from them, among 30 prophets, were concerned about this verse. These are the commandments which Hashem commanded Moses. So that's the last pasuk of Vayikra. Ela mitzvot asher tziva Hashem et Moshe. These, ela, and there's no adding and there's no subtracting. And the prophets cannot add to the thing from thence. So this is still the Midrash telling the story. And what it's saying is, Mordechai and Esther send out the second letter urging people to accept the holiday, and the sages are still incredibly frightened. This time, it's because we have a Torah, and guess what it says in the Torah? These are the laws that God commanded. Not whatever you think of later, but these. How can you come and institute a new holiday? How can you come and institute these new mitzvot? But Mordechai and Esther tried to add a new law upon them until the Holy One, blessed be He, illuminated their eyes, and they found this written in the Torah, the prophets, and the writings. So Mordechai and Esther continued to push and push and push for their new holiday until the sages actually come to the realization, the Midrash is claiming, that there are references to this holiday in all parts of the Torah, in the Torah itself, in the Nevi'im, and in the Ketuvim, in the prophets and in the writings. And that's the way that they'll find to justify this new series of mitzvah. In the Torah, it is written, write this remembrance in a book. K'tov zot zikaron b'sefer. And again, the word sefer here is our link. We've been talking about the Megillah in terms of Sefer. We talk about how Mordechai and Esther send out letters and books. So the Torah is saying, so the Midrash is saying, Sefer, that's our key word. But also, if you look at the context for this verse, the context for this verse is the obligation to wipe out Amalek. And midrashically, Haman is always understood to be from Amalek, to be the final descendant of Amalek. And the holiday of Purim about being one of the final battles between the Jewish people and Amalek. So actually, the Midrash is saying this is not its own separate thing. This is actually a continuation of a mitzvah that we've already been given. In the prophets, it is written, then they that feared Hashem spoke with one another, and Hashem hearkened, and a book of remembrance was written. Again, we have the word book, sefer, but I want us to look at the full pasuk here to make sure that we understand what's going on in Malachi. In this vein, and again, I'm in the common, in this vein, those who revere the Lord have been talking to one another. The Lord has heard and noted it. And a scroll of remembrance has been written at his behest concerning those who revere the Lord and esteem his name. So two parts here. First, we actually have God in this pasuk listening to what's going on earth and acting as a result. And this is, again, the theme of our midrash. When does God acquiesce? When does God actually respond to the Jewish people? Which mitzvot are actually instituted by the Jewish people and then accepted by God above. But we also have this second half, where the scroll of remembrance is where it is actually God participating in the writing. So there are two stages. God listens and acquiesces, but then is participating. So this actually not only has God's approval, but God's involvement. Line 8, in the writings, it is said, are not these things written in the book of Chronicles. So here, the pasuk from Esther, which before was used to reference the secular history books, here is being used for the word for sefer, the word booked. And here it's being used actually to claim that this is also within the works of Ketuvim. Okay, let's continue and finish this off. Rav and Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Yonatan, the son of Kapara, and Rabbi Yoshua, the son of Levi, said, this Megillah, it did not say it was from the mouth of the Beit Din, but was said to be from Sinai. Rather, there is no before and after in the Torah. So here's a new idea. Actually, it's not that we had all the mitzvot given at Sinai, and then however many years later, they came and wrote Megillat Esther, and it was added on retroactively. This actually was always meant to be there. And in some way, this Megillah was actually written at the time of Sinai or was intended from Sinai. And how do we understand the fact that it only gets incorporated now? There's no order in the Torah. There's something non-chronological about this. This is actually a collapse of time here that I want us to pay attention to, because for us it can seem like a stretch, but there's also something incredibly beautiful about it. In this line, revelation no longer happens chronologically. In this line, there is the moment of standing at Sinai, and there is the moment of, and now nothing else can happen. But that gets collapsed because we actually don't think of Torah and revelation as linear. We actually think of Torah and revelation as somehow all being wrapped up there, wrapped up in that moment. And we can't actually use our regular way of understanding time, our regular way of understanding sequence. Francine Shaga has a much better way of explaining this than I did. She says, in memory, unconscious time also collapsed. That's beautiful. Thank you. Let's look at the last line. And from where did the Holy One, blessed be He, agree? How do we know that God agreed to Megillat Esther? Rav said, the Jews ordained and took upon them. So let's look at this in the Hebrew. Kimu v'kiblu hayuhudim. But in the actual text, Rav says, it doesn't say kimu in the, it doesn't say kiblu in the plural, accepted in the plural. It actually says kibel. Why does it actually say kibel in the singular? Because the rabbi of the Jews, Rabban Shel Hayehudim, kibel. Now, 2 points here. In the translation of Root Rabbah that is widely accepted and is very beautiful that I've used throughout this, they insert in parentheses Moses to understand Rabban Shel Hayehudim, the rabbi of the Jews. I personally side with the Eitz Yosef, the Russian commentary that I've mentioned before. I think that's referencing not Moshe. It wasn't Moshe who accepted this, but God, God's self, which seems to follow better both thematically and in what the Midrash is actually asking. Okay, Bracha Lieberman says, could be unity as one voice. Yes, so let's go there for a moment. I'm sorry that the Midrash was longer than usual today, so there was less chance for participation than usual today. But here is where I want to leave us. We often think about Shavuot as a holiday where God essentially proposes to the Jewish people and the Jewish people accept. This is a very common theme. There are actually these amazing traditional Shavuot ketubot that exist, marriage contracts between God and the Jewish people that are sometimes read on Shavuot in some communities. Part of what I think this midrash is doing is looking at that relationship and saying, for all that formally, we have a system where often one part of the couple proposes to the other, one party in the couple proposes to the other and the other accepts, that's never actually how it works in reality. In reality, proposal and marriage acceptance is an ongoing process. It does not happen at one moment. It happens continually in a relationship. And actually, it involves both parties at different times. There are times where God proposes and the Jewish people accept, But there are actually other points in history where it's the Jewish people proposing and God accepting. And this Midrash, I think, is pointing us to that model of relationship hidden within our more common conception of our relationship with God. And asking us to think about what are the moments where the Jewish people have proposed to God, have proposed marriage to God, and I think sometimes in the most beautiful ways in this Midrash, actually mentioning God's name all the time so that God will never be forgotten. And the question I want to leave us with today is, are there moments in your life where you feel like you have in some way reached out to God? Are there moments in your life where you in some way feel like you have proposed to God as we go into this holiday that is understood to be a celebration of our marriage? Thank you so much, everyone. Oh, I love these comments in the chat. People who have to sign off, go for it, but I'm going to read them. Francine Shraga, accept your new relationship with God and with marriage partner continuously. Absolutely. David Kaplan, this is like dropping a rock in water, results in concentric circles moving out for eternity. That's beautiful. Thank you. Thank you so much, everyone. I've so enjoyed this. Be well. Bye.